Greg Litton joining us here, former major leaguer with the San Francisco Giants, kind enough to make time for us here today to talk a little baseball in the thick of things. This Giants, one of the best records in Major League Baseball. Greg, what's happening, buddy?
Oh, great to be on with you guys. And that's right, my Giants are playing well, so I'm happy.
I think you and I are both in that boat, though. Knowing baseball, you want to root for your team, but you're also realistic. If your kid is like 5'2" as an adult, and he's like 20. He's like, "Daddy, I really want to go to college to play basketball." And you're like, "Yeah, son, they don't have play school hoops over there, you know." But when it comes down to it, the Giants and the Red Sox roster, I think we both understand they're overachieving, probably. But I'll take it.
Oh, absolutely. It's like if your son says that and he's 5'2", you go, "Son, you can do anything you put your mind to." And then in your head, you're thinking, "Well, I sure hope he changes his mind sometime soon." But
son, you'll be you'll be one hell of a horse jockey, son. You will. I promise it.
Yeah. But it's always great in baseball. I hate to beat a dead horse and say it, but we always have those teams that do it. And one team that I tell you what I just love are the Tampa Bay Rays. Chad, they do it every year with a small payroll. They don't ever have the huge Yankee Red Sox payrolls, anything like that. But son of a gun, if they don't just put out a great baseball team almost every year. But I love how they do it. If you watch the Rays, at least last time I saw, they're like one of the league leaders in fewest strikeouts. They're just more old-fashioned, just good hitters. They don't just swing for the fence and strike out, 25 times a night. I love watching them, and I think, they're proof, and the Giants and maybe the Red Sox this year too can show everybody that you can win without those big payrolls by playing good old-school baseball.
Greg, looking right now at the game, you see a lot of athletes that are on pitch counts, and they're talking about getting them ready for the playoffs. How far do you think coaches and these guys getting paid millions upon millions, they're just being safe compared to pushing to the limit? I mean, I saw a stat yesterday, Satchel Paige, and they just don't make them like it used to. Even your generation, they don't make them like they used to, the Matt Williams and the Will Clarks. But to watch a guy like Satchel Paige pitch till he was 57 years old, and he actually, I think he had like a 3 ERA that year, but to watch that and then – people used to pitch like Cy Young back-to-back games, 9-inning games. I know the guys throw harder today. They don't take as many reps. But where do you think that they cut their limit off compared to where they actually could push themselves when it comes to pitch count?
Well, it's so hard to know, Chad, because they're brought up with this same type of mentality and saving and not overdoing. And I understand, a lot of that. I mean, there's been a lot of kids' careers ruined because coaches were, let's just face it, idiots and ran them into the ground. But we keep hearing that, baseball players and, everybody's bigger, stronger, faster, but they can't do what, they were doing 20, 30 years ago. I don't get it. I think part of it's how they're brought up and they're taught to think of, safety, and I don't want to hurt myself. We were taught run through that wall if that's what it takes to win the game, and that's the way I played. I didn't save anything. I didn't hold back. I might get hurt if I go hard here. You just play hard and give it everything you got and let the chips fall where they may. But I think it's just the whole attitude of, safety first. You can't take out the second baseman. You can't run over the catcher because, you can't hit a batter with a pitch because, Lord forbid, it might end a career. And, when has that happened? I think they're over, it's not even a word, I don't think, but safety-izing the game. And I think it's just terrible.
Greg, looking right now, college baseball, you had a chance to be around the game and watching so many players in this area grow up and have that opportunity. But for a lot of these kids today, the fundamentals, what to you makes college baseball, and it's not the most popular from, because really what's popular is what's on the mainstream. It doesn't always mean it's the best. It's like, you know, buying that CD and you realize there's seven or eight other songs out there that are better than the one that you hear 500 times on the radio. But in this case, college baseball, what's one of the things that you like about it compared to the pros? Because there are a lot of fundamental things that I think Tom Emanski would be proud of.
Well, I think that's the big thing. In college baseball, there's still, it's almost like take college basketball in a sense versus watching NBA. College basketball, they play defense. You know, they do the little things to get to the pros, and it's just all about scoring, jumping, and, who's the most athletic. And I don't know. It's baseball is the same way. They play the little ball. They're doing all the things, I think, because they're trying to win, and winning is paramount, not just putting up personal stats. And I think that's the key to a great team, no matter what level you're on.
Greg, when you're looking right now at Blue Wahoos baseball and having an opportunity from the Marlins coming down here and the organizations, right now their pitching staff is pretty lights out. But for the people out there that might not know, because you played in the minors for a while and had an opportunity to be around a lot of teams, what is the biggest difference between some of the Double-A prospects compared to the Single-A and Triple-A prospects and the level of expectations to get to the bigs?
Well, we've probably talked about this a ton, but Double-A is without a doubt the biggest jump in minor league baseball, and I think in professional baseball. It could depend on going from high school to rookie ball would be a huge jump, and you better be just a tremendous, tremendous player way ahead of your age, because you just went from high school to playing against basically an all-star Division I level talent. But then the next jump, though, is from A-ball to Double-A. It's just A-ball, you face a lot of pitchers, or at least back in the day, they pitched the way a lot of the pitchers are now. They just, rearing back, throwing it hard as they can, not really pitching. They get behind 2-0, 3-1, and they just, rear back, and that's a lot of fun to hit when you get a count 2-0, 3-1, and you can sit on a fastball no matter how hard it's coming. But I think that's easily the biggest jump. I remember going from Triple-A to the big league. I didn't think that jump was even near going to Double-A, because when you went from A-ball to Double-A, you all of a sudden you went, like I said, from 2-0, 3-1 fastballs 95% of the time to guys – 2-0, 3-1, able to throw breaking balls for strikes and behind in the count, and it changed dramatically. But even going to the big leagues, you've got better. Obviously, you get to eat better because you have money. your travel, you got charter flights instead of being at the airport at 5 a.m. all day flights, or 12-hour bus rides. And I think without a doubt, though, Double-A is, if you can succeed, if you're successful in Double-A, you can play in the big league. That doesn't mean you will, but talent-wise, you can play in the big league.
Speaking with former major leaguer Greg Litton joining us here, having an opportunity to talk some baseball. Greg, I know you're mixed on this just based on that you've been around the game for a while. You want to respect other players. Some of these unwritten rules that we're seeing, though, today, the Fernando Tatis, a load of garbage when they say things like he hustled a single into a double. To me, that's hustle and gets you more playing time as a kid. But watching people today and what you saw from, what we talked about even earlier this year with the way that they talked about it was being Bush League swinging at 3-0. But you've been around the game. Drew and I talking about it, if we said this is the way it should be, that's not fair, because you actually worked for the business that creates these unwritten rules. So where do you say? Do you feel like we're going down a path where we still should show some respect, but at the same time, we need to understand culture's changing and that the game, they're looking for ways to make it more entertaining? And Fernando Tatis, who's probably the biggest borderline-type player when it comes to these, quote, unwritten rules, is the most entertaining player and seems like a pretty nice guy.
Yeah, it's a fine line, Chad. I mean, you don't want the game to be boring. And I get years and years ago it may have been. But at the same time, like you said earlier, just because something's popular, or it doesn't mean it's the right way to do things. And I'm sorry, if you're trying to build a great team, and ultimately, Chad, what fills the seats isn't one player hitting home runs or doing being a superstar. It's winning. If you're not winning, I don't care how good a couple of your players are, you're not going to fill the stands. You're not going to be great. You're not going to go to the World Series or accomplish anything, and accomplish anything that really makes the team money. So you can do all that stuff you want, jump up and down and pat yourself on the back. But the bottom line is that kind of garbage doesn't build teamwork. It's all about me. Look at me. And if you want to win, you got to build a great team. And obviously, if you can get great players, if you've got a great lineup and you can get them to buy into that mentality, then and obviously the sky's the limit for a team like that. But I don't think this me, I, look at me, look, I just hit a home run, I'm going to jump up and down and do a bat flip. Yeah, I just don't see that building teamwork and a great team.
Greg, when you look at a lot of times the length of a season and going through some of those up and downs, yeah, how what's the hardest part in baseball to try to get out of one of those funks? And on the other side, how is it where some teams like the Rays, who looked like an average to mediocre team, can just go on like 18-game winning streaks? Because in other sports, usually the Denver Broncos right now, current roster, or the Sacramento Kings in basketball, they're not just going to go on these huge sprees because it just doesn't happen that way. How in baseball can these teams that even aren't playoff contenders do that?
Well, I think we've mentioned it, Chad, that baseball is the greatest game in the world because you can't dominate the game just by pure athleticism. And, I mean, look at LeBron James. And you put two or three, studs on an NBA court, and you can dominate the game and win. You can't do that in baseball. Baseball isn't about just the biggest, strongest, and fastest. It's about teamwork. It's about doing the little thing. It's about the pitcher that understands, don't walk leadoff hitters after a three-run, inning, half inning before. Just little things like that, don't do the things that lose ball games. And you can do the little things. You can hit behind the runner. You can get the runner over, make the plays defensively, don't throw to the wrong base. And in baseball, that changes everything because it's not about physical talent. One guy like LeBron, you can have like Tatis. Well, he only gets the bat once every three innings. He may not get a ball. He can be the best, and he's not, but I'm saying whoever the best shortstop in the game is. Well, he might go the whole game, Chad, with only getting two ground balls. He can't control or dominate a game with his defense because they may not hit it to him that game. And so that's why I think baseball is so different and so unique and so awesome, because it is about the team and everybody doing their job. And if you do that like the Rays are doing it, you can beat anybody. Now, the hard part is, like you mentioned, the longevity of a baseball season. That's the hardest thing. 162 games in 182 days with spring training and all that work, and then trying to keep your strength up, trying to stay in shape during the season without getting worn out, going from AstroTurf to regular, grass and all this. It's one game's not hard in baseball, but 162 games, I'm telling you, wears you out physically. And especially the roster and the guys that aren't that deep. That's the hardest part, is to keep it up for 162 games. That's why in baseball, usually the cream rises to the top because of that, the longevity. And I think that's the hardest thing in baseball, is to do it for that long.
Greg, when you look at an opportunity to play for some legendary coaches, you played for Roger Craig. You talk about, Dusty Baker, what he did for the Giants. Bruce Bochy won three World Series. I know that was after you left. But when it comes down to a coach, a manager, as we call him in baseball, what is the number one job? Because my friend used to joke, and he was just not a baseball fan. He was a big offensive lineman and thought football was king, which a lot of people do, and I understand. It's fun to watch. But when it comes down to baseball, what is, to you, the number one job of a manager? Because he used to say, once the game starts, they just rock and eat sunflower seeds. And clearly, that's ridiculous. But when it comes down to it, what is something that you feel is the number one job? Because you're around these coaches during batting practice, the little things and the things in the dugout. But what to you is the number one job of a manager that makes managers great?
Well, I'll tell you one of the aspects that I think the great managers do that some of them don't seem to understand. And Lou Piniella was great at this. Dusty was my hitting instructor, so I never really played with him as a manager to see this, but I can't imagine he's not very good at it, because he's, like I said many times, he's the most knowledgeable baseball person I've ever been around. But Lou Piniella was great about this. Roger Craig was actually really good my first 2 years. But the thing that I think managers have to do is just what I was talking about, 162 games. Very few players like Cal Ripken can play all 162 games, all right? So even back then, those guys need some rest periodically. And especially in the National League, you have to keep your bench, you have to keep your starters fresh, and you also have to keep your bench sharp. And you do that by resting a starter occasionally and playing your bench as much as you can. Because when you know, I remember times my last 2 years in San Francisco, Chad, I was sent up to face Rob Dibble in the ninth inning in a one-run game, and I hadn't even been – I hadn't had an at-bat in 6 days, all right? It's hard enough hitting Rob Dibble throwing 100 miles an hour if you play every day. But when you haven't played in 6 or 7 days, and sometimes I went 9 or 10 days if we didn't have a lefty starter, if it just went on a bad rotation for me where we missed all the other team's lefties, well, I'm not fresh. So you can't win without your bench contributing, and if you don't, and Jim Leland, one time, we went into Pittsburgh. It's one of the wisest things I've ever heard. The night before, Pittsburgh was playing somebody else, and the headline in the Pittsburgh Gazette or whatever it was they asked Jim Leland why he gave Barry Bonds and Bobby Bonilla a night off the night before the same game. Because typically you don't want to give your big stars a night off. And this was early in the season, in June, July, something like that. And he said, because they were both tired and needed a day off. He said, and they actually won the game. But he said, I was prepared to lose this game because I don't want to lose 5 or 6 in August or September because they're worn out. And I thought that was just a really incredible thing to say and realize. But on top of it, by doing that, you keep your bench, you know, sharp. So when you need those pinch hits, you need those guys to step in and play a game. They're not just thrown out there as sacrificial lambs because they haven't played in a week, 10 days. So I think that's one of the most important things a manager can do.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most important life lessons too. I've done that personally, Greg. I have said, I'm not going to go out on this Tuesday so I could save up all my strength to party just my face off on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So I've done that exact same thing where I've taken a few nights off.
You gotta have a plan, Chad.
Exactly. I think that's where you were going with this. I think. I'm not sure. But, hey, Greg, I know you're getting ready. We have to take a break. We got the Wahoos coming up here in a little while. But before we do, I know you're getting ready, doing bigger things than just baseball, having a chance to get ready to be in the race right now for city council, correct? County commissioner, House district, yes. County commissioner, right now.
Well, for the
House district,
for state rep.
I'll let you
state
talk.
Rep.
I'm screwing this up. So go.
Yeah. That's okay. For state rep, and I've always wanted to serve and be involved. I think my personality is. I think we need, quite frankly, more teamwork in politics, and not only teamwork, but because you can go into politics and just follow the crowd and be led. on a team that's not doing very well. But I think we need more leadership, people that can get some others to follow them and build, around character and teamwork and get stuff done for the panhandle and stand up for what's right, but do it by convincing others to follow you and get on board than just to alienate everybody. And that's what I'd like to do. And, I may get there and find out, maybe politics is too dirty and lost, but I'm really naive to some degree, but I believe I can make a difference, and that's what I'd like to do.
Well, and Greg, you know Dr. Bud and everyone at Northeast Tacoma, Mac, awesome guy, works there, Roger Scott, his son. He just texted me. Yeah, he said, prayers for Pinella. I know Lou's battling cancer right now, he said. So I did not know that at the time.
I didn't know that.
No,
I didn't either.
No,
so. I'm glad I heard that so I can pray as well, because I only played for him 1 year, but it was one of the best years I had, and I think it's because Lou always kept me, every 3, 4, 5 days had me playing and kept me fresh and sharp, and I really appreciated that.